And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. We bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is Ken Thompson.
Hello, everybody.
And our special guest today is Molly Olson, who we're speaking to in Minnesota, St. Paul in the USA. Molly is the founder and executive director of the Center for Parental Responsibility. She is the co-founder and president of Leading Women for Shared Parenting and part of the coalition to create a White House Council on Boys and Men. Molly is well known throughout the US Capitol for her tireless efforts on behalf of children. And we're going to be speaking to her today about a new group. It's only started it started operations on Father's Day in 2013, and it's called Leading Women for Shared Parenting. So, Molly, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's amazing that we can be talking across the world like this and sharing the same interests.
Now, Leading Women for Shared Parenting, was it considered unusual for a group of women to be supporting shared parenting?
Well, yes, I guess women had never really coalesced together around this issue of shared parenting before the formal organization Leading for Women for Shared Parenting began in the U.S. And what we had found is for, you know, decades, I've been working in family law reform now for, this will be my 17th year, starting my 17th year. And what we found is that typically it was the men that were speaking up for themselves at the legislatures with the government, you know, saying, this is what I want. This is how we want to see our laws written. I'm not seeing my kids. You know, I want to see my kids. I need to see my kids. I have a right to see my kids. And they were the voice at the legislature. But because the legislators in the United States have been so averse to changing these laws, they started just disparaging the men that would speak up for themselves. They would call them uncooperative. They would call men really getting in the way and not willing to get along. And they would label them as being like angry dads just trying to get out of their child support. You know, they'd start demeaning them. And then what happened in my organization in Minnesota, I realized that as I had my monthly meetings where I opened up invitations for anybody in the whole state who wanted to attend, that more and more it was very obvious that the fastest demographic that was interested in this issue were the women that are the support system around these men. They were not just the second wives, because the second wives were typically disparaged as well. Oh, you know, this is just the second wives club. They would try to diminish them in that way. But they were the paternal grandparents that were very interested, aunts and uncles and sisters of these men that were going through this, who were also losing contact with their children. And we started recognizing that across the United States, there were various women that were starting to speak up in the press, in the media, who were starting to actually write positive things about this issue and the need for fathers. And, you know, long story short, it was the brainchild of someone named Terry Brennan, who thought, you know what, we really need to work hard to bring these women together, because it's going to be a lot harder for the legislators to fight and disparage women than it has been for them to disparage men. That's maybe a little bit longer explanation than you are looking for there, but that's kind of the background of how this all started.
Yes, look, that's great. And do you think women have more of an effect when trying to change these laws? Are the voices of women more effective than men's voices?
Well, definitely in the United States, it's been that way. Like I said, men are just kind of written off and disparaged, and their people seem to not policymakers anyway, seem to not care about men. They're always willing to take on children's issues, and they're willing to take on women's issues. Well, you know what? This has become a women's issue. And it is a, the beauty of it also is that it's a nonpartisan issue with bipartisan support, which means that politically, people on both sides of the fence, both sides of the political aisle, can really come together on this issue and show common interest in something that they can work together and collaborate on solutions for.
There seems a little bit of uncertainty about the meaning of shared parenting. Do you mean by that a particular share, or do you mean 50-50 when you refer to shared parenting?
Well, that's a really good question. We sometimes refer to it as equal shared parenting, sometimes refer to it as shared parenting, and there's a lot of other phrases that have been used to talk about the same dream or hope or expectation that we are advocating for. The research shows that the minimum amount of time that children can even expect to have any solid relationship with their father is, or with either parent, is 35% time. The research is abundantly clear that 35% must be an absolute minimum time. So you, for a fit, loving, responsible dad that's ready, willing, and able to step up to the plate, they should absolutely, no questions asked, get that 35%. And then we're saying that what would be even better is to get to maximize that time as close to equal as possible. And there's a lot of debate and a lot of objections that people throw out when we use the word 50-50 parenting time. And of course, we always want and assume that there's a basis of equality means 50-50. If both parents can step up to the plate, and if their schedule can logistically allow for that, the school schedule can logistically allow for it, the geographic location can justify that, then by all means, let's maximize it as close to 50 as possible. Because the research also says that as 35% parenting time is the baseline to develop a relationship of a meaningful value to the child, that value exponentially goes up as they get more time closer to equal. So it's a range in between there, and maximizing the time is important. A range with a minimum, and of course, obviously, a maximum if you're sharing the parenting.
And we're speaking with Molly Olson. Molly, you were very influential in getting the HF322 through in the US legislature, which means effectively that there's a minimum of 35% parenting for, unless there are other factors, 35% minimum for each parent in Minnesota. That's not the end of the road. So you're going to push on now with Leading Women for Shared Parenting to get up to 50%?
Well, in our Minnesota law right now, we unfortunately only have 25% as the baseline in our statute. In 2012, we did get our law changed so that the judges are required to consider the benefits of maximizing the time with both parents. But I don't believe our Minnesota law, I know our Minnesota law still is not strong enough. I would say the two states in the United States that have the strongest legislation, and by the way, in the United States, this is a state's issue. The federal government cannot dictate parenting time. So each state has to do it on their own. But currently, the states that have the strongest shared parenting time laws are Arizona, which they have a much stronger requirement to maximize the time with both parents, which effectively means and is interpreted as close to 50% as possible. And then also in the state of Utah is where they have a minimum of 40% parenting time. So those two states, Arizona and Utah, probably right now have the strongest laws. And then just this year, of course, we're starting new legislative sessions. sessions in the new calendar year of 2016. And right now we've got the two states that are making the most progress at this point in time are Florida and Missouri, and they are fighting for equal in their laws. So we'll see. You know, our legislative process, I'm sure, as in Australia, has many, many steps along the way, many, many committee hearings. We have House and we have Senate. And so it's a process over time. We'll hope and continue to push and continue to support everybody that is pushing this in the state of Florida, in Missouri as well.
I admire your energy. After 17 years, you're still pushing so hard. We're going to take a short break now. This is a song pretty much on the topic. It's called A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You by The Monkees. And that was A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You by The Monkees. And we're speaking with our guest today, Molly Olson, who is a founder and president of the Leading Women for Shared Parenting in the USA. So, Molly, we were just talking about the different states in America where there are different rules as far as shared parenting. Is Wisconsin another state where the shared parenting is favorable to both parents?
Well, Wisconsin has been one of those states where the law is not abundantly clear in the statute. So the advocates for shared parenting in Wisconsin are still fighting for stronger verbiage in the law. But there are pockets within parts of Wisconsin, various counties, where they are doing shared parenting, and it has been very successful, and the lawyers in that area will say, you know, why would we do it any different? And we haven't heard any negative outcomes when they are doing that. In fact, the domestic violence rates are down, are much lower where they have shared parenting in Wisconsin than in other areas where we have compared domestic violence, which is always a concern when people are talking shared parenting. But normally in all of these laws where we are pushing for a presumption of parental equality, the domestic violence is always an exception.
Yes, you'd think that would be a very strong argument for shared parenting. But do you apply the principle of equal shared time or any shared parenting with very young children?
That's a common question that people have. And the research has been coming out in the last 5 years in a tremendous way, showing that children are attaching to their fathers even in infancy. So if they are not getting those relationships solidified in infancy, then it's creating a sense of abandonment for these children for a lifetime. I even heard a speaker a couple weeks ago that said these parental relationships, there's evidence these parental relationships are even built in the womb. Mm. So the opponents of shared parenting actually love to say that, oh, you can't have shared parenting when the kids are under five, but that is, there's absolutely no credible research to say that the time with the father should be limited when the children is below 5 years old. In fact, quite the opposite, that they need the father just as much equally during those years.
Yes, I wish we could get the message through to some of the judges in Australia on that topic. But we were talking about this group, Leading Women for Shared Parenting. Is that limited to leading women? Now, who actually are the members of this group?
Oh, we do have some men involved in the organization, although because it is Leading Women for Shared Parenting, our primary focus is to attract women that are in a position of credibility and authority in various fields. We have women researchers that are involved in Leading Women for Shared Parenting. We have legislators across the country. We have advocates in various kinds of elements. For example, we have a woman in Leading Women for Shared Parenting. Her name is Phyllis Schlafly. She is known as a very strong conservative advocate for a variety of issues. And then we also have the late Karen DeCrow, who was part of shared parenting before she passed away, and she was a strong supporter of the Equal Rights Amendment. And what's interesting is Phyllis and Karen were both debating opposite views of the Equal Rights Amendment, but they both agree that equal shared parenting is best for children. So we, to answer your question, we also have media people, did I say that? We've got media people from across the country that are also interested in Leading Women for Shared Parenting, therapists, all kinds of different professions. And yes, there are men that are, it's important to get their views because they're the ones that are affected by all of this in the most negative way. So we do have them involved, but our primary focus is continuing to reach out to women who really know that this is important.
And you do have some international members, I understand. Are there any in Australia at this stage?
You know, I don't believe there is any in Australia right now, so we'd welcome anybody listening to your program to contact us. Look on the website, Leading Women for Shared Parenting, LW4SP.org, and we would love to invite people from your country to participate in this. We do have participants all over the world, and it happened not necessarily even by design, but more by chance and by interest, by people from other countries reaching out to us and saying, hey, you're doing something really important here, and we recognize that this is an issue across the world. Unfortunately, it's hard to believe we're in the year 2016 and there's still lack of parental equality is still an issue for so many people in so many countries.
Yes, the research would indicate that this is pretty much a no-brainer, but who are these people that oppose shared parenting?
Well, they are typically mostly the lawyers. They are a small elite group of well-entrenched special interest groups that are spearheaded by lawyer groups, and it's usually a vast majority of lawyer groups that are they're well-funded. They have been at the legislature for years and years and years. They donate to campaigns. They are the bar associations. They're a group called AFCC. LLC. They're another lawyer group, the matrimonial law attorneys, legal aid attorneys. It's mostly all attorneys that oppose shared parenting, or people like some of the therapists, actually, who are ignoring the research but are gaining in the system. They're financially benefiting from the conflict in the current system and doing custody evaluations and parenting consulting. And there's all kinds of professions that have sprung up to try to divide families. And for those that are making a living off of it and getting paid, the more conflict there is, the more need there is for more specialists, and the more billable hours they are, and the more money they all make, that is the primary group that is against shared parenting.
And that makes it even harder for you, I suppose, because we're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry.
Yes, with the lawyers, absolutely. They hold a lot of clout with the policymakers, because they can make people's lives pretty miserable. We have had judges, actually. There are a few lawyers here and there. And in Canada, actually, there's a group called Lawyers for Shared Parenting. And I know that they are interested in growing as well. And I have an interest in growing the number of lawyers that are interested and willing to speak up on shared parenting, because there's many. I have had over the years, the last 16 years, many lawyers that I've contacted and who've contacted me, and judges that have said, keep going, Molly, I support what you're doing, but I can't go public. As an attorney, as a judge, I can't go public, or I will be disparaged by my whole profession. It will impact the outcomes that I get in the process if I speak up for you. So they're worried about retribution from their own profession if they speak up for shared parenting when their whole profession is against it. It's very pitiful.
What about the statement that most cases are settled anyway? You're still fighting in that situation as well, I presume. Are you saying that settlements aren't necessarily the answer in this situation?
Well, that is a very common objection when people say, oh, why are you fighting for this? Most cases settle. Well, yes, probably 80 to 90% of the cases do settle, but they're all settling under the color of law. So they're all settling with the understanding that when they go to court, there's going to be one winner parent and one loser parent, and the winner parent's probably going to be the mom parent. So there is a lot of coercion outside of the court system for dads to settle for less.
So it's got that indirect effect. I like some of the wording in your statement that the current situation on shared parenting has to change, and it will change, and I hope it's not another 17 years before we see that happening. But Molly, I asked you if you could pick a song for us. I wonder if you could tell us which song you picked and why you picked it.
Yes, I picked the song Lay Down the Burden of Your Heart by Amy Grant. I became aware of this song in the late 1970s, and it just brings tears to my eyes and just, oh, my heart just gets so warmed when I hear this song, because I think it really emphasizes the importance of how dads can be there for people, and how people seek out their dad and need their dad no matter what their age, whether you're 5 months old or 55 years old right now like I am. We all still need our dad, and our dads are ready, willing, and able to be there for us. And they are better people because we, as children, are in their lives.
Yes, and I'm sure you feel that way about your own father. So this is Amy Grant singing Lay Down the Burden of Your Heart.
It's a cold, cold world that we're walking through. Lay down the burden of your heart. But it's warm as toast, walking two by two. Lay down the burden of your heart. Lay down the burden of your heart. I know you'll never miss it. daddy where it hurts and let your daddy lift it. It's a fine, fine line betwixt love and hate. Why it's tough to tell the two apart, but you
was Lay Down the Burden of Your Heart by Amy Grant. And we've had as our special guest today Molly Olson, who is the founder and president of Leading Women for Shared Parenting. Molly, this is such a great topic. I wish you every strength in your right arm as you press on with this very important issue. So thank you very much for being on our program today.
Thank you for having me. I'd be more than happy to come back again.
Oh, that's wonderful. We will check back with you to see how it's all progressing. So that's it for this week from Dads on the Air. We'll be back next week with another program. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So until next week, it's goodbye from Dads on the Air.